Polly had put a keen edge on the razor. It rested against the lieutenant's cheek. Polly thought about the murder, though all right, the killing of an escaping prisoner in the woods. It won't be the first officer I've killed.
Probably one of them clerical errors, sir, said Jackram coldly.
In the gloomy room, with moss now colonizing the walls, the sergeant loomed large. An owl, perched on the chimney, gave a screech. It echoed down into the room.
In fact, no, sergeant, said Blouse, apparently oblivious to the razor. Your package, sergeant, had been tampered with, on numerous occasions. Once even by General Frock. He deducted 10 years from your age and signed the change. And he wasn't the only one. Frankly, Sergeant, I'm forced to only one conclusion.
And what's that, sir?
The razor halted again, still pressed against Blouse's neck. The silence seemed to last for some time, sharp and drawn out.
That there was some other man called Jackram, said Blouse slowly, whose records have got mixed up with yours, and every attempt to sort it out by officers who were not entirely at home with figures only made it more confusing.
The razor started to move again with silky smoothness.
I think you put your finger right on it, sir, said Jackram.
I am going to write an explanatory note and add it to the packet, Blouse went on. It seems to me the sensible thing to do would be to ask you here and now how old you are. How old are you, sergeant?
43, sir, said Jackram instantly.
Polly looked up, expecting the generic thunderclap that ought to accompany such a universe-sized untruth.
Are you sure? Said Blouse.
45, sir. The hardships of a soldier's life shows up on a face, sir.
Even so.
Ah, I'd recall a couple of extra birthdays, what had slipped my memory, sir. I'm 47, sir.
Still no rumble of celestial disapproval, Polly noticed.
Yes, very well. After all, you should know, eh, Sergeant? I shall amend it.
Thank you, sir.
Just like General Frock did. And Major Galosh. And Colonel Leggin, Sergeant.
Yes, sir. Clerical error has followed me around all the days of my life, sir. I've been a martyr to it.
Jackram stood back.
There we are, sir. Face as smooth as a baby's bum. Smooth is how things should be, eh, sir? I've always liked things smooth.
They watched Lieutenant Blouse walk down through the trees to the path. They watched him join the erratic, straggling line of women on their way to the door. They listened for screams and heard none.
"Does any woman sway that much?" said Wazza, peering through the bushes.
"Not legally, I think," said Polly, scanning the keep with the lieutenant's telescope.
"Well, we'll just have to wait for some kind of signal that he's okay."
Somewhere overhead a buzzard screamed.
"Oh, no, they'll have got him the moment he walked through the door," said Maledict. "Bet on it."
They left Jade on watch. With her paint scraped off, a troll could settle into rocky scenery so well that no one was likely to notice her before they walked into her. And by the time they'd walked into her, it was too late. They made their way back through the woods and had almost reached the ruined farmhouse when it happened.
"You are holding up well, Mal," said Polly. "Maybe those acorns did the trick. You haven't mentioned coffee at all."
Maledict stopped and turned slowly. To Polly's horror, his face was suddenly shiny with sweat.
"You had to bring it up, didn't you?" he said hoarsely. "Oh, please, no, I was holding on so tight. I was doing so well."
He fell forward, but managed to get onto his hands and knees. Then he raised his head, and his eyes were glowing red.
"Fetch Igorina!"
he muttered, gasping. "I know she's ready for this."
Bop, bop, bop.
Wazza was praying furiously. Maledict tried to stand up again, fell back onto his knees, and raised his arms imploringly to the sky.
"Get out of here while you can," he mumbled as his teeth visibly lengthened.
There was a shadow, a sense of movement, and the vampire slumped forward, stunned by an 8-ounce sack of coffee beans that had dropped out of a clear sky. Polly arrived at the farmhouse carrying Maledict on her shoulder. She made him as comfortable as possible on some ancient straw, and the squad consulted.
"Do you think we ought to try and take the sack out of his mouth?"
said Shufti nervously.
"I tried, but he fights," said Polly. "But he's unconscious."
"He still won't let go of it. He's sucking it. I'd swear he was out cold, but he just sort of reached out and grabbed it and bit. It dropped out of a clear sky.
Tonka stared at Wazza.
The Duchess does room service, she said. Now she says she didn't.
You get Freak Rain the fish,
said Igorina, kneeling down by Maledict. I suppose it's possible that a whirlwind tore through a coffee plantation, and then possibly a lightning discharge in the upper ether.
At what point did it blow through a factory making small coffee sacks, said Tonka, ones with jolly turbaned men printed on them, apparently saying, Clatchy and Rare Roasted, when a pickaxe is not enough?
Well, if you're going to put it like that, it does seem a little far-fetched,
Igorina admitted.
She stood up, adding, I think he'll be fine when he wakes up. Possibly a little talkative, though.
Okay, lads, get some rest, said Jackram, stamping in. Let's give the Rupert a couple of hours to muck things up, and then we can nip around the valley and slip down through and join the rest of the army. Good grub and proper blankets to sleep on, hey? That's the ticket.
We don't know he's going to mess up, Sarge, said Polly.
Oh, yeah, right. Maybe he'll have married the command of the garrison by now, eh? Stranger things have happened, although I can't remember when. Perks and Manacle, you're on watch. The rest of you, get some shut-eye.
A's Labinian patrol went past in the distance. Polly watched it out of sight. It was turning into a fine day, warm with a bit of wind. Good drying weather. A good day to be a washerwoman. Maybe Blouse would succeed. Maybe all the guards were blind.
Poll, Shifty whispered.
Yes, Shifty.
Look, what was your name back in the world?
Betty, it's Betty. Most of the ins and outs are in the keep, right?
Apparently.
So, that's where I'm most likely to find my fiancé, yes?
We've talked about that, Polly thought.
Could be.
Might be quite hard if there's a lot of men,
said Betty, a woman with something on her mind.
Well, if we get as far as the prisoners and ask around, they'll be bound to know his name. What is it?
Johnny,
whispered Betty.
Just Johnny, said Polly.
Yes.
Ah, Polly thought, I think I know how this goes. He's got fair hair and blue eyes, and I think he had one gold earring, and a funny-shaped, what do you call it? Oh, yes, sort of carbuncle on his bottom, Betty went on.
Right. Now I've come to tell someone, it doesn't sound very helpful, I suppose.
Not unless we're in a position to have a very unusual identification parade, Polly thought, and I can't imagine what position that would be.
Not as such, she said. He said everyone in the regiment knows him, Betty went on.
Right?
Oh, good, said Polly. All we need to do is ask.
And, we were going to break a sixpence in half, you know, like they do, so that if he had to be away for years, we'd be sure we'd got the right person, because the two halves would match.
Oh, that would be a bit of a help, I expect, said Polly.
Well, yes, except, well, I gave him the sixpence, and he said he'd get the blacksmith to break it in his vice, and he went off, and, I think he got called away.
Betty's voice trailed off. Well, that was about what I expected, Polly thought.
I expect you think I'm a silly girl,
mumbled Betty after a while. A foolish woman, perhaps, said Polly, turning to watch the landscape intently.
It was, you know, a whirlwind romance.
Sounds more like a hurricane to me, said Polly, and Betty grinned.
Yes, it was a bit like that, she said.
Polly matched smile for smile.
Betty, it's daft to talk about silly and foolish at a time like this, she said. Where are we going to look for wisdom? To a god who hates jigsaws and the colour blue? A fossil government led by a picture? An army that thinks stubbornness is the same as courage? Compared to all that, all you've got wrong is timing.
I don't want to end up in the school, though, said Betty, a.k.a. Shufti. They took away a girl from our village and she was kicking and screaming.
Then fight them, said Polly. You've got a sword now, haven't you? Fight back!
She saw the look of horror on Betty's face, and remembered that this wasn't Tonka she was talking to. Look, if we get out of this alive, we'll talk to the Colonel. He might be able to help. After all, perhaps your boy really was called Johnny, she thought. Perhaps he really was called away suddenly. Hope is a wonderful thing, she went on. If we get out of this, there's going to be no school and no beatings, not for you or any of us. Not if we've got brains. Not if we're smart.
Betty was almost in tears, but she managed another smile. And Wazza's talking to the Duchess, too. She'll fix things. Polly stared out at the bright, unchanging landscape, empty except for a buzzard making wide circles in the forbidden blue. "I'm not sure about that," she said, "but someone up there likes us." Twilight was brief at this time of year. There had been no sign from Blouse.
"I watched until I couldn't see," said Jade as they sat and watched Shufti make stew. "Some of the women that came out was ones I saw going in this morning, too."
"Are you sure?" said Jackram.
"We might be fixed, Sarge," said Jade, looking hurt, "but trolls have great, biz you all ack you it tea. More women was going in this evening, too."
"Night shift," said Tonka.
"Oh, well, he tried," said Jackram. "With any luck, he's in a nice warm cell, and they've found him a pair of long pants. Get your kit together, lads. We'll creep around and into our lines, and you'll be snug in bed by midnight."
Polly remembered what she'd said hours ago about fighting. You had to start somewhere. "I want to try the keep again," she said.
"You do perks, do you?" said Jackram, with mock interest.
"My brother's in there."
"Nice safe place for him, then."
"He might be injured. I vote for the keep."
"Vote?" said Jackram. "My word, that's a new one, voting in the army. Who wants to get killed, lads? Let's have a show of hands. Knock it off, perks."
"I'm going to try it, Sarge."
"You are not."
"Try and stop me." The words came out before she could stop them. And that's it, she thought, the shout heard round the world. "No going back after this. I've run off the edge of the cliff, and it's all downhill from here." Jackram's expression stayed blank for a second or two, and then he said,
"Anyone else voting for the keep?"
Polly looked at Shufti, who blushed, but...
"We are,"
said Tonka. Beside her, Lofty struck a match and held it so that it flared. That was pretty much a speech from Lofty.
"Why, pray?" said Jackram.
"We don't want to sit around in a swamp," said Tonka, "and we don't like being ordered about."
"Should have thought of that before you joined the army, lad."
"We aren't lads, Sarge."
"You are, if I says you are."
Well, it's not as though I wasn't expecting it, Polly thought. I've played this out enough times in my head. Here goes. "All right, Sarge," she said. "It's time to have it out, here and now."
"Whir,"
said Jackram theatrically, fishing his screwed-up paper of tobacco out of his pocket.
"What?"
Jackram sat down on the remains of a wall.
"Just injecting a little sauciness into the conversation," he said. "Carry on, perks. Have your say. I thought it had come to this."
"You know I'm a woman, Sarge," said Polly.
"Yep, I wouldn't trust you to shave cheese."
The squad stared. Jackram opened his big knife and examined the chewing tobacco, as though it was the most interesting thing present.
"So, what are you going to do about it?" said Polly, feeling derailed.
"Dunno. Can't do anything, can I? You were born like it."
"You didn't tell Blouse," said Polly.
"Nope."
Polly wanted to knock the wretched tobacco out of the sergeant's hand. Now that she had got over the surprise, there was something offensive about this lack of reaction. It was like someone opening a door just before your battering ram hit it. Suddenly you were running through the building and not certain how to stop.
"Well, we're all women, Sarge," said Tonka. "How about that?"
Jackram sawed at the tobacco.
"So?"
he said, still paying attention to the job in hand.
"What?"
said Polly.
"Think no one else ever tried it? Think you're the only ones? Think your old Sarge is deaf, blind, and stupid? You could fool one another, and anyone can fool a Rupert, but you can't fool Jackram. Weren't sure about Maledict, and still ain't, because with a vampire, who knows? And not sure about you, Carborundum, because with a troll, who cares? No offence."
"None taken,"
rumbled Jade. She caught Polly's eye and shrugged.
"Not so good at reading the signs, not knowing many trolls," said the sergeant. "I had you down pat in the first minute, Oz. Something in the eyes, I reckon. Like you were watching to see how good you were."
"Oh, hell," Polly thought. "Do I have a pair of socks belonging to you?"
"Yep, well washed, I might add."
"You'll have them back right now," said Polly, grabbing for her belt.
"In your own time, perks, in your own time, no rush," said Jackram, raising a hand. "Well washed, please."
"Why, Sarge," said Tonka, "why didn't you give us away? You could have given us away any time."
Jackram slewed his wad from cheek to cheek and sat chewing for a while, staring at nothing.
"No, you ain't the first," he said. "I seen a few. Mostly by themselves, always frightened, and mostly they didn't last long. But one or two of them were bonny soldiers, very bonny soldiers indeed. So I looked at you lot and I thought to myself, well now, I thought, I wonder how they'll do when they find out they're not alone. You know about lions?" They nodded. "Well, the lion is a big old coward mostly. If you want trouble, you want to tangle with the lioness. They're killers and they hunt together. The same everywhere. If you want big grief, look to the ladies. Even with insects, right? There's a kind of beetle where she bites his head off right while he's exercising his conjugals. And that's what I call serious grief. On the other hand, from what I heard, he carries on regardless. So maybe it's not the same for beetles." He looked around at their blank expressions. "No?" he said. "Well, maybe," I thought, "a whole bunch of girls all at once, that's strange. Maybe there's a reason." Polly saw him glance briefly at Wazza. "Anyway, I wasn't going to shame you all in front of a little toad like Strappy. And then there was all that business in plots. And then, well, we was galloping, as it were, caught up in things with no time to get off." "You did well, lads, very well. Shaped up like good uns."
"I'm going into the keep," said Polly.
"Oh, don't worry about the Rupert," said Jackram. "Probably he's enjoying a nice bowl of scubbo right now. He went to a school for young gentlemen, so prison will be just like old times."
"We're still going, Sarge, sorry," said Polly.
"Oh, don't say sorry, Perks. You were doing well up until then," said Jackram bitterly. Shufti stood up.
"I'm going too," she said. "I think my fiancé is in there." "I have to go," said Wazza. "The Duchess guides my steps."
"I'll go then," said Igorina. "I'm probably going to be needed."
"I shouldn't think I could get by as a washerwoman," rumbled Jade. "I'll stay here and watch over Mal. Ha! If he's still after blood when he wakes up, he's going to have blunt teeth."
They looked at one another in silence, embarrassed but defiant. Then there was the sound of someone clapping slowly.
"Oh, very nice," said Jackram. "A band of brothers, eh? Oh, sorry, sisters. Oh, dear, oh, dear. Look, Blouse was a fool. It was probably all them books. He read all that stuff about it being a noble thing to die for your country, I expect. I was never that keen on reading, but I know the job is making some other poor devil die for his."
He slewed his black tobacco from side to side.
"I wanted you to be safe, lads. Down in the press of men, I reckoned I could get you through this, no matter how many friends the prince has sent after you. I look at you, lads, and I think, you poor boys, you don't know nothing about war. What are you going to do? Tonka, you are a crack shot, but after one shot, who's backing you up while you reload? Perks, you know a trick or two, but the blokes in the castle will maybe know a trick or five. You're a good cook, Shufti. Too bad it's going to be too hot in there. Will the Duchess turn aside arrows, Wazza?"
"Yes, she will."
"I hope you're right, my lad," said Jackram, giving the girl a long, slow look. "Personally, I've found religion in battle is as much use as a chocolate helmet. You'll need more than a prayer if Prince Heinrich catches you, I might add."
"We're going to try it, Sarge," said Polly. "There's nothing for us in the army."
"Will you come with us, Sarge?" said Shufti.
"No, lad. Me as a washerwoman, I doubt it. Don't seem to have a skirt anywhere about me for a start. Just one thing, lads. How are you going to get in?"
"In the morning, when we see the women going in again," said Polly.
"Got it all planned, General, and you'll be dressed as women."
We are women, Sarge," said Polly.
"Yes, lad, technical detail, but you kitted out the Rupert with all your little knick-knacks, didn't you? What are you going to do? Tell the guards you opened the wrong cupboard in the dark?"
Another embarrassed silence descended.
Jackram sighed. "This ain't proper war," he said. "Still, I said I'd look after you. You are my little lads," I said. His eyes gleamed. "And you still are, even if the world's turned upside down. I'll just have to hope, Miss Perks, that you picked up a few tricks from old Sarge, although I reckon you can think of a few of your own. And now I'd better get you kitted up, right?"
"Perhaps we could sneak in and steal something from the villages where the servants come from," said Tonka.
"From a bunch of poor women," said Polly, her heart sinking.
Anyway, there'd be soldiers everywhere. Well, how do we get women's clothes on the battlefield? Said Lofty.
Jackram laughed, stood up, stuck his thumbs in his belt, and grinned.
I told you, lads, you don't know nothing about war, he said.
And one of the things they didn't know was that it had edges. Polly wasn't certain what she'd expected. Men and horses, obviously. In her mind's eye, they were engaged in mortal combat, but obviously you couldn't go on doing that all day. So there would be tents, and that was about as far as the mind's eye had seen. It hadn't seen that an army on campaign is a sort of large, portable city. It has only one employer, and it manufactures dead people, but like all cities, it attracts citizens. What was unnerving was the sound of babies crying off in the rows of tents. She hadn't expected that. Or the mud. Or the crowds. Everywhere there were fires and the smell of cooking. This was a siege, after all. People had settled in. Getting down onto the plain in the dark had been easy. There was only Polly and Shufti trailing after the sergeant, who'd said that more would be too many and in any case would attract too much attention. There were patrols, but their edge had been dulled by sheer repetitiveness. Besides, the Allies weren't expecting anyone to make much effort to get into the valley, at least in small groups. And men in the dark make noise, far more noise than a woman. They'd located a Borogravian sentry in the gloom by the noise of him trying to suck a morsel of dinner out of his teeth. But another one had located them when they were a stone's throw from the tents. He was young, so he was still keen.
Halt! Who goes there, friend or foe?
The lights from a cooking fire glinted off a crossbow.
See, whispered Jackram, this is where your uniform is your friend. Aren't you glad you kept it?
He swaggered forwards and spat tobacco between the young sentry's boots.
My name's Jackram, he said. That's Sergeant Jackram. As for the other bit, you choose.
Sergeant Jackram,
said the boy, his mouth staying open.
Yes, lad.
What, the one who killed 16 men at the Battle of Zop?
There was only 10 of them, but good lad for knowing it.
The Jackram who carried General Frock through 14 miles of enemy territory?
That's right.
Polly saw teeth in the gloom as the sentry grinned.
My dad told me he fought with you at Blunderberg.
Ah, that was a hot battle, that was, said Jackram.
No, he meant in the pub afterwards. He pinched your drink and you smacked him in the gob and he kicked you in the nadgers, and you hit him in the guts and he blacked your eye, and then you hit him with a table, and when he came round his mate stood him beer for the evening for managing to lay nearly 3 punches on Sergeant Jackram. He tells the story every year, when it's the anniversary, and he's reminiscing.
Jackram thought for a moment, and then jabbed a finger at the young man.
Joe Haberkirk, right? He said.
The smile broadened to the point where the top of the young man's head was in danger of falling off.
He'll be smirking all day when I tell him you remember him, Sarge, said the sentry. He says that where you piss, grass don't grow.
Well, what can a modest man say to that, eh? Said Jackram.
Then the young man frowned.
Funny, though. He thought you were dead, Sarge, he said.
Tell him I bet him a shilling I'm not, said Jackram. And your name, lad?
Lart, Sarge. Lart Haberkirk.
Glad you joined, are you?
Yes, Sarge,
said Lart loyally.
We're just having a stroll, lad. Tell your dad I asked after him.
I will, Sarge.
The boy stood to attention like a one-man guard of honour.
This is a proud moment for me, Sarge.
Does everyone know you, Sarge? Whispered Polly as they walked away.
Aye, pretty much, on our side anyway. I'll make so bold as to declare that most of the enemy that meets me don't know anything much afterwards.
I never thought it was going to be like this, hissed Shufti.
Like what? Said Jackram.
There's women and children, shops, I can smell bread baking. It's like a city.
Yeah, but what we're after isn't going to be in the main streets. Follow me, lads.
Sergeant Jackram, suddenly furtive, ducked between 2 big heaps of boxes and emerged beside a smithy, its forge glowing in the dusk. Here the tents were open-sided. Armourers and saddlers worked by lantern light, shadows flickering across the mud. Polly and Shufti had to step out of the way of a mule train, each animal carrying 2 casks on its back. The mules moved aside for Jackram. Maybe he's met them before too, thought Polly. Maybe he really does know everyone. The sergeant walked like a man with the deeds to the world. He acknowledged other sergeants with a nod, lazily saluted the few officers there were around here, and ignored everybody else.
"You been here before, Sarge?" said Shufti.
"No, lad."
"But you know where you're going."
"Correct. I ain't been here, but I know battlefields, especially when everyone's had a chance to dig in."
Jackram sniffed the air.
"Ah, right, that's the stuff. Just you two wait here."
He disappeared between two stacks of lumber. They heard a distant muttering, and after a moment or two, Jackram reappeared holding a small bottle. Polly grinned. "Is that rum, Sarge?"
"Well done, my little bar steward. And it would be nice if it was rum, upon my word, or whiskey, or gin, or brandy. But this don't have none of those fancy names. This is the genuine Stingo, this is. Pure hangman."
"Hangman?"
said Shufti. "One drop and you're dead," said Polly. Jackram beamed as a master to a keen pupil.
"That's right, Shufti. It's rotgut. Wheresoever men are gathered together, someone will find something to ferment in a rubber boot, distill in an old kettle, and flog to his mates. Made from rats, by the smell of it. Ferments well, does your average rat. Fancy a taste?"
Shufti shied away from the proffered bottle. The sergeant laughed.
"Good lad. Stick to beer," he said.
"Don't the officers stop it?" said Polly.
"Officers? What do they know about anything?" said Jackram. "And I bought this off a sergeant, too. Anyone watching us?"
Polly peered into the gloom.
"No, Sarge."
Jackram poured some of the liquid into one pudgy hand and splashed it onto his face.
"Yowch!"
he hissed.
"Stings like the blazes.
And now to kill the toothworms. Got to do the job properly." He took a quick sip from the bottle, spat it out, and shoved the cork back in.
"Muck," he said. "Okay, let's go."
"Where are we going, Sarge?" said Shufti. "You can tell us now, can't you?"
"A quiet little place where our needs will be met," said Jackram. "It's around here somewhere."
"You don't half smell of drink, Sarge," said Shufti. "Will they let you in if you smell drunk?"
"Yes, Shufti lad, they will," said Jackram, setting off again. "The reason being, my pockets jingle and I smell of booze. Everyone likes a rich drunk. Ah, down this little valley here, that'll be our... Yeah, I was right, this is the place. Tucked away, delicate-like. See any clothes hanging out to dry, boys?"
There were a few washing lines strung behind the half-dozen or so drab tents in this side valley, which was little more than a wash gouged out by winter rains. If there had been anything on them, it had been taken in against the heavy dew.
"Shame," said Jackram. "Okay, so we'll have to do it the hard way. Remember, just act natural and listen to what I say."
"I'm shaking, Sarge," Shufti muttered.
"Good, good. Very natural," said Jackram. "This is our place, I think. Nice and quiet, no one watching us. Nice little path up there to the top of the wash."
He stopped outside a very large tent and tapped on the board outside with his swagger stick.
"The solid doves," Polly read.
"Yeah, well, these ladies weren't hired for their spelling," said Jackram, pushing open the flap of the tent of ill repute.
Inside was a stuffy little area, a sort of canvas antechamber. A lady, lumpy and crow-like in a black bombazine dress, rose from a chair and gave the trio the most calculating look Polly had ever met. It finished off by putting a price on her boots. The sergeant doffed his cap and, in a jovial, rotund voice that peed brandy and crapped plum pudding, said,
"Good evening, madame. Sergeant Smith's the name, yes, indeed. And me and my bold lads here have been so fortunate as to acquire the spoils of war, if you catch my drift. And nothing would do for it but they were clamouring to go to the nearest house of good repute for to have a man made of 'em."
Little beady eyes skewered Polly again. Shufti, ears glowing like signal beacons, was staring fixedly at the ground.
"Looks like that'll be a job and a half," said the woman shortly.
"You never spoke a truer word, madame," beamed Jackram. "Two of your fair flowers apiece should do it, I reckon."
There was a clink as, staggering slightly, Jackram put several gold coins on the rickety little table. Something about the gleam of it thawed things no end. The woman's face cracked into a smile as glutinous as slug gravy.
"Well, now, we're always honoured to entertain the ins and outs, Sergeant," she said. "And if you gentlemen would like to step through to the, inner sanctum?"
Polly heard a very faint sound behind her and turned. She hadn't noticed the man sitting on a chair just inside the door.
He had to be a man because trolls weren't pink. He made Eyebrow back in Plune look like some kind of weed. He wore leather, which was what she'd heard creaking, and he had his eyes just slightly open. When he saw her looking at him, he winked. It wasn't a friendly wink. There are times when a plan suddenly isn't going to work. When you're in the middle of it is not the time to find this out.
Sarge, she said.
The sergeant turned, saw her frantic grimace, and appeared to spot the guard for the first time.
"Oh, dear, where's my manners?" he said, lurching back and fumbling in his pocket.
He came up with a gold coin, which he folded in the astonished man's hand. Then he turned around, tapping the side of his nose with an expression of idiot knowingness.
"A word of advice, lads," he said. "Always give the guard a tip. He keeps the riff-raff out very important. Very important man."
He stumbled back to the lady in black and belched hugely.
"And now, madame, if we can meet these visions of loveliness you are hiding under this here bushel," he said.
It depended, Polly thought a few seconds later, on how and when, and after drinking how much of what, that you had those visions. She knew about these places. Serving behind a bar can really broaden your education. There were a number of ladies back home who were, as her mother put it, no better than they should be. And at 12 years old, Polly had got a smack for asking how good they should have been then. They were an abomination unto Nuggan, but men have always found space in their religion for a little sinning here and there. The word to describe the four ladies seated in the room beyond, if you wanted to be kind, was tired. If you didn't want to be kind, a whole range of words were just hanging in the air. They looked up without much interest.
"This is faith, prudence, grace, and comfort," said the lady of the house. "The night shift has not yet come on, I'm afraid."
"I'm sure these beauties will be a great education for my roaring boys," said the sergeant. "But may I be so bold as to inquire about your name, madame?"
"I'm Mrs. Smother, sergeant."
"And do you have a first name, may I ask?"
"Dolores," said Mrs. Smother, "to my special friends."
"Well now, Dolores," said Jackram, and there was another jingle of coins in his pocket. "I will come right out with it and be frank, because I can see you are a woman of the world. These frail blossoms are all very well in their way, for I know the fashion these days is for ladies with less meat on them than a butcher's pencil. But a gentleman such as me, who has been around the world and seen a thing or two, well, he learns the value of maturity," he sighed. "Not to mention hope and patience."
The coins jingled again.
"Perhaps you and I might retire to some suitable boudoir, madame, and discuss the matter over a cordial or two?"
Mrs. Smother looked from the sergeant to the lads, glanced back in the anteroom, and looked back at Jackram with her head on one side and a thin, calculating smile on her lips.
"Yes," she said. "You're a fine figure of a man, Sergeant Smith. Let us take a load off your pocket, shall we?"
She joined arm in arm with the sergeant, who winked roguishly at Polly and Shufty.
"We're well set then, lads," he chuckled. "Now just so's you don't get carried away, when it's time to go I'll blow my whistle, and you'd better have finished what you're doing. Ha 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 ha, and meet me sharpish. Duty calls. Remember the fine traditions of the ins and outs."
Giggling and almost tripping up, he left the room on the arm of the proprietress. Shufty sidled hurriedly up to Polly and whispered,
"Is Sarge all right, Elsa?"
"He's just had a bit too much to drink," said Polly loudly, as all four of the girls stood up.
"But he..."
Shufty got a nudge in the ribs before she could say any more. One of the girls carefully laid down her knitting, took Polly's arm, flashed her well-crafted expression of interest, and said,
"You're a well-set-up young man, aren't you? What's your name, dear?"
"I'm Gracie."
"Oliver," said Polly.
"And what the hell is the fine tradition of the ins and outs?"
"Ever seen a woman with no clothes on before, Oliver?"
The girls giggled. Polly's brow wrinkled as, just for a moment, she was caught unawares.
"Yes," she said, "of course."
"Oh, it looks like we've got ourselves a regular Don, Jew, and girls," said Gracie, stepping back. "We may have to send out for reinforcements. Why don't you and me and Prudence go off to a little nook I know, and your little friend will be the guest of Faith and Comfort. Comfort's very good with young men, ain't you, Comfort?
Sergeant Jackram had been wrong in his description of the girls. Three of them were indeed several meals short of a healthy weight, but when Comfort got up out of her large armchair, you realised that it had in fact been quite a small armchair, and had mostly been Comfort. For a large woman, she had a small face, locked in a piggy-eyed scowl. There was a death's head tattoo on one arm.
"He's young," said Gracie. "He'll heal. Come along, Don Juan."
In a way, Polly was relieved. She didn't take to the girls. Oh, the profession could bring anyone down, but she'd got to know some of the town's ladies of uneasy virtue, and they had an edge she couldn't find here. "Why do you work here?" she said as they entered a smaller, canvas-walled room. There was a rickety bed, taking up most of the space.
"You know, you look a bit too young to be that sort of customer," said Gracie.
"What sort?" said Polly.
"Oh, Holy Joe," said Gracie. "What's a girl like you doing in a place like this and all that stuff? Feel sorry for us, do you? At least if someone cuts up rough, we've got Gary outside, and after he's finished with the bloke, the colonel gets told, and a bastard gets bunged in clink."
"Yeah," said Prudence. "From what we hear, we're the safest leaders within 25 miles. Old Smother's not too bad. We get money to keep, and we get fed, and she don't beat us, which is more than can be said for husbands. And you can't wander around loose now, can you?"
Jackram put up with Blouse because you've got to have an officer, Polly thought. If you don't have an officer, some other officer will take you over. And a woman by herself is missing a man, while a man by himself is his own master. Trousers, that's the secret. Trousers and a pair of socks. I never dreamed it was like this. Put on trousers and the world changes. We walk different. We act different. I see these girls and I think, idiots, get yourself some trousers.
"Can you please get your clothes off?" she said. "I think we'd better hurry."
"One of the ins and outs, this one," said Gracie, slipping her dress off her shoulders. "Keep an eye on your cheeses, Prue."
Why does that mean we're in the ins and outs?" said Polly.
She made a show of unbuttoning her jacket, wishing that she believed in anyone there to pray so that she could pray for the whistle.
"That's 'cause you lads always have your eye on business," said Gracie.
And maybe there was someone listening at that. The whistle blew. Polly grabbed the dresses and ran out, oblivious to the yells behind her. She collided with Shufti outside, tripped over the groaning form of Gary, saw Sergeant Jackram holding the tent flap open, and bulleted into the night.
"This way," the sergeant hissed, grabbing her by the collar before she'd gone a few feet and swinging her round. "You too, Shufti, move."
He ran up the side of the wash like a child's balloon being blown by the wind, leaving them to scramble after him. His arms were full of clothing, which snagged and danced behind him. Up above was knee-deep scrub, treacherous in the gloom. They tripped and staggered across it until they reached heavier growth, whereupon the sergeant got hold of both of them and pushed them into the bushes. The shouts and screams were fainter now.
"Now we'll just keep quiet-like," he whispered. "There's patrols about."
"They'll be bound to find us," Polly hissed, while Shufti wheezed.
"No, they won't," said Jackram. "First, they'll all be running towards the shouting, because that's nature. There they go."
Polly heard more shouts in the distance.
"And bloody fools they are, too. They're supposed to be guarding the perimeter, and they're running towards trouble in the camp. And they're running straight towards lamplight, so there goes their night eyes. If I was their sergeant, they'd be due a fizzer. Come on."
He stood up and pulled Shufti to her feet.
"Feeling all right, lad?"
"It was horrible, Sarge. One of them put her hand on my socks."
"Something that doesn't often happen, I'll bet any man," said Jackram. "But you did a good job. Now we'll walk nice and quiet, and no more talking till I say, okay?"
They plodded on for 10 minutes, skirting the camp. They heard several patrols, and saw a couple of others on the hilltops as the moon rose. But it dawned on Polly that, loud though the shouting had been, it was only part of the huge patchwork of sound that rose out of the camp. The patrols this far away probably hadn't heard it, or at least were commanded by the kind of soldiers who didn't want to get put on a fizzer. In the dark, she heard Jackram take a deep breath.
"Okay, that's far enough. Not a bad job of work, lads. You're real ins and outs now."
"That guard was out cold," said Polly. "Did you hit him?"
"You see, I'm fat," said Jackram. "People don't think fat men can fight. They think fat men are funny. They think wrong. Gave him a chop to the windpipe."
"Sarge," said Shufti, horrified.
"What? What?"
"He was coming at me with his club," said Jackram. "Why was he doing that, Sarge?"
"Oh, you cunning soldier, you," said Jackram. "All right, I grant you that I'd just given Madame the old quietus. But, to be fair, I know when someone's just handed me a bleeding drink full of sleepy drops."
"You hit a woman, Sarge," said Polly.
"Yeah, and maybe when she wakes up in her corsets, she'll decide that next time a poor old drunk fat man wanders in, it mightn't be such a good idea to try to roll him for his wad," growled Jackram. "I'd be in a ditch without my drawers on, and a damn great headache if she'd had her way. And if you two was daft enough to complain to an officer, she'd swear black was blue that I didn't have a penny on me when I came in, and was drunk and disorderly. And the colonel wouldn't care a fig, because he'd reckon a sergeant daft enough to get caught like that at it coming to him. I know, you see. I look after my lads."
There was a clink in the dark.
"Plus a few extra dollars won't go amiss."
"Sarge, you didn't steal the cash box, did you?" said Polly.
"Yep. Got a good armful of her wardrobe, too."
"Good," said Shufti fervently. "It wasn't a nice place."
"It was mostly my money in any case," said Jackram. "Business has been a bit slow today by the feel of it."
"But it's immoral earnings," said Polly, and then felt a complete fool for saying it.
"No," said Jackram. "It was immoral earnings. Now it's the proceeds of common theft. Life's a lot easier when you learns to think straight."
Polly was glad there was no mirror. The best that could be said for the squad's new clothing was that it covered them up. But this was a war. You seldom saw new clothes on anybody. Yet they felt awkward. And there was no sense in that at all. But they looked at one another in the chilly light of dawn and giggled in embarrassment. "Wow," Polly thought, "look at us, dressed as women." Oddly enough, it was Igorina who really looked the part. She'd disappeared into the other tumble-down room carrying her pack. For 10 minutes the squad had heard the occasional grunt or ouch, and then she'd returned with a full head of hair, shoulder-length hair. Her face was the right shape, missing the lumps and bumps they'd come to know, and the stitches on her forehead shrank and disappeared as Polly watched in astonishment. "Doesn't that hurt?" she said.
"It smarts a bit for a few minutes," said Igorina. "You just have to have the knack, and a special ointment, of course."
"But why is there a curved scar on your cheek now?" said Tonka. "And those stitches are staying." Igorina looked down demurely. She'd even restyled one of the dresses into a dirndl, and looked like a fresh young maid from the beer cellar. Just to look at her was to mentally order a large pretzel.
"You've got to have something to show," she said. "Otherwise you're letting down the clan. And actually I think the stitches are rather fetching."
"Well, okay," Tonka conceded. "But lisp a bit, will you? I know this is completely wrong, but now you look, oh, I don't know, weird, I suppose."
"Okay, line up," said Jackram.
He stood back and gave them a look of theatrical disdain.
"Well, I've never seen such a lot of washerwomen in all my life," he said. "I wish you all the luck you're bleeding well gonna need. There'll be someone watching the door for you to come out, and that's all I can promise. Private Perks, you're acting unpaid corporal on this one. I hope you've picked up one or two little lessons on our stroll. In and out, that's what you should do. No famous last stands, please. When in doubt, kick him in the nadgers and scarper. Mind you, if you frighten them like you frighten me, you should have no trouble."
"Are you sure you won't join us, Sarge?" said Tonka, still trying not to laugh.
"No, lad, you won't get me in skirts. Everyone has their place, right? The place where they draw the line, well, that's mine. I'm pretty steeped in sin one way and another, but Jackram always shows his colours. I'm an old soldier. I'll fight like a soldier does, in the ranks, on the battlefield. Besides, if I went in there simpering in petticoats, I'd never hear the end of it."
"The Duchess says there is a different path for Sergeant Jackram," said Wazza.
"And I don't know if you don't frighten me worst of all, Private Goom," said Jackram. He hitched up his equatorial belt. "You're right, though. When you're inside, I shall nip down nice and quiet and slip into our lines. If I can't raise a little diversionary attack, my name's not Sergeant Jackram. And, since it is Sergeant Jackram, that proves it. Ah, there's plenty of men in this man's army that owe me a favour." He gave a little sniff and added, "Or wouldn't say no to my face. And plenty of likely lads who'll want to tell their grandchildren they fought alongside Jackram, too. Well, I'll give them their chance at real soldiering.
Sarge, it'll be suicide to attack the main gates, said Polly.
Jackram slapped his belly. See this lot? He said. It's like having your own armour. Bloke once stuck a blade in this up to the hilt, and was surprised as hell when I nutted him. Anyway, you lads will be making so much fuss the guards will be distracted, right? You're relying on me, I'm relying on you. That's military, that is. You give me a signal, any signal. That's all I'll need.
The Duchess says your path takes you further, said Wazza.
Oh, yeah, said Jackram jovially. And where's that, then? Somewhere with a good pub, I hope.
The Duchess says, it should lead to the town of Scritz, said Wazza.
She said it quietly while the rest of the squad were laughing, not so much at Jackram's comment as a way of losing some of the tension. But Polly heard it.
Jackram was really, really good, she thought. The fleeting expression of terror was gone in an instant.
Scritz? Nothing there, said Jackram. Dull town.
There was a sword, said Wazza.
Jackram was ready this time. There was not a flicker of expression, just the blank face that he was so good at.
And that was odd, Polly thought, because there should have been something, even if it was only puzzlement.
Handled lots of swords in my time, he said dismissively. Yes, Private Holter.
There's one thing you didn't tell us, Sarge, said Tonka, lowering her hand. Why is the regiment called the Ins and Outs?
First into battle, last out of the fray, said Jackram automatically.
So why are we nicknamed the Cheesemongers? Yes, said Shifty. Why, Sarge? Because the way those girls were talking, it sounded like it's something we ought to know.
Jackram made a clicking noise of exasperation.
Oh, Tonka, why the hell did you wait till you got your trousers off before asking me that? I'll feel embarrassed telling you now.
And Polly thought, that's dangling bait, right? You want to tell us. You want to get any conversation away from Scritz.
Ah, said Tonka, it's about six, then, is it?
Not as such, no.
Well, tell me then, said Tonka. I'd like to know before I die. If it makes you feel any better, I'll nudge people and go, kneh, kneh, kneh.
Jackram sighed.
There's a song, he said. It starts, 'twas on a Monday morning all in the month of May.
Then it is all about sex, said Polly flatly. It's a folk song. It starts with 'twas. It takes place in May. QED. It's about sex. Is a milkmaid involved? I bet she is.
There could be, Jackram conceded.
Going for to market, for to sell her wares, said Polly.
Very likely.
Okay, that gives us the cheese. And she meets, let's see, a soldier, a sailor, a jolly ploughboy, or just possibly a man clothed all in leather, I expect. No, since it's about us, it's a soldier, right? And since it's one of the ins and outs, oh dear, I feel a humorous double entendre coming on. Just one question. What item of her clothing fell down or came untied?
Her garter, said Jackram. You've heard it before, Perks.
No. But I just know how folk songs go. We had folk singers in the lower bar for 6 months back where I worked. In the end, we had to get a man in with a ferret. But you remember stuff. Oh, no.
Was there canoodling, Sarge? Said Tonka, grinning.
Kayaking, I expect, said Igorina to General Sniggering.
No, he stole the cheese, didn't he? Sighed Polly. As the poor girl was lying there, waiting for a garter to be tied, him, he damn well made off with her cheese, right?
Not damn, not with the skirt on Oz, Tonka warned.
Then it's not Oz either, said Polly. Fill your hat with bread, fill your boots with soup, and steal the cheese, eh, Sarge?
That's right. We've always been a very practical regiment, said Jackram. An army marches on its stomach, lads. On mine, of course, it could hold a parade.
It was her own fault. She should have been able to tie up her own garters, said Lofty.
Yeah, probably wanted her cheese stolen, said Tonka.
Wise words, said Jackram. Off you go, then, cheesemongers.
The mist was still thick as they made their way down through the woods to the path by the river. Polly's skirt kept catching in brambles. It must have done so before she joined up, but she'd never noticed it so much. Now it was seriously hindering her. She reached up and absent-mindedly adjusted the socks, which she'd separated to use as padding elsewhere. She was too skinny, that was the trouble. The ringlets would have been useful there. They would have said, girl,
In their absence, she had to rely on a scarf and a socks change.
"All right," she whispered as the ground levelled out. "Remember, no swearing. Giggle, don't snigger. No belching. No weapons either. They can't be that stupid in there. Anyone bought a weapon?"
There was a shaking of heads.
"Did you bring a weapon, Tonk?"
"Magda?"
"No, Polly." "No item of any sort with a certain weapon-like quality?"
Polly insisted.
"No, Polly," said Tonka demurely. "Anything, perhaps, with an edge?"
"Oh, you mean this?"
"Yes, Magda." "Well, a woman can carry a knife, can't she?"
"It's a sabre, Magda. You're trying to hide it, but it's a sabre."
"But I'm only using it like a knife, Polly."
"It's 3 feet long, Magda."
"Size isn't important, Polly."
"No one believes that. Leave it behind a tree, please. That is an order."
"All right."
After a while, Shofty, who had appeared to be thinking deeply, said,
"I can't understand why she didn't just tie up her own garter."
"Shofty, what the hell?" Tonka began. "Heck," Polly corrected her. "And you're talking to Betty, remember?"
"What the heck are you talking about, Betty?"
said Tonka, rolling her eyes.
"Well, the song, of course. And you don't have to lie down to tie a garter in any case. It'd be more difficult," said Shofty. "It's all a bit silly."
No one said anything for a while. It was perhaps easy to see why Shofty was on her quest.
"You're right," said Polly eventually. "It's a silly song." "A very silly song,"
Tonka agreed. They all agreed. It was a silly song. They stepped out onto the river path. Ahead of them, a small group of women were hurrying around a bend in the cliff. Automatically, the squad looked up. The keep grew out of the sheer cliff. It was hard to see where the unhewn rock ended and the ancient masonry began. They could see no windows. From here, it was just a wall extending to the sky. "No way in," it said. "No way out. In this wall are few doors, and they close with finality." This close to the deep, slow river, the air was bone-chilling cold, and grew colder the higher they looked. Around the curve, they could see the little rock shelf where the back door was, and the women ahead of them talking to a guard.
"This is not going to work," said Shofty under her breath. "They're showing him some papers. Anyone brought theirs? No?"
The soldier had looked up and was watching the girls with that blank, official expression of someone who was not looking for excitement or adventure in his life.
"Keep moving," murmured Polly. "If it all gets really bad, burst into tears."
"That's disgusting," said Tonka. Their treacherous feet were taking them closer all the time. Polly kept her eyes downwards, as was proper in an unmarried woman. There would be others watching, she knew it. They'd probably be bored. They might not be expecting any trouble, but up on those walls there were eyes fixed on her. They reached the guard. Just inside the narrow stone doorway there was another one, lounging in the shadow.
"Papers?" said the guard.
"Oh, sir, I have none," said Polly.
She'd been working out the speech on the way down through the wood. War, fears of invasion, people fleeing, no food. You didn't have to make things up. You just had to reassemble reality.
"I had to leave."
"All right," the guard interrupted. "No papers, no problem. If you just step in and see my colleague, nice of you to join us."
He stood aside and waved a hand toward the dark entrance. Mystified, Polly stepped inside with the others following. Behind them, the door swung shut. Inside, she saw that they were in a long passage with many slits in the wall to rooms on either side. Lamplight shone from the slits. She could see shadows beyond them. Bowmen could turn anyone trapped in here into mince. At the end of the corridor, another door swung open. It led into a small room in which there sat, at a desk, a young man in a uniform Polly didn't recognise, although it had a captain's insignia. Standing to one side was a much, much larger man in the same uniform, or possibly two uniforms stitched together. He had a sword. There was that about him. When this man held a sword, it was clearly held, and held by him. The eye was drawn to it. Even Jade would have been impressed.
"Good morning, ladies," said the captain. "No papers, eh? Take off your scarves, please."
"And that's it," thought Polly, as the bottom of her stomach dropped away, "and we thought we were being clever." There was nothing for it but to obey.
"Ah!" "You'll tell me your hair got shaved off as a punishment for fraternizing with the enemy, eh?" said the man, barely looking up. "Except for you," he added to Igorino. "Didn't feel like fraternizing with any enemies? Something wrong with decent Lobinian boys?"
No, said Igorino.
Now the captain gave them a bright little smile. "Gentlemen, let's not mess about, shall we? You walk wrong. We do watch, you know. You walk wrong and you stand wrong. You," he pointed to Tonka, "have got a bit of shaving soap under an ear. And you, lad, are either deformed or you've tried the old trick of sticking a pair of socks down your undershirt."
Crimson with humiliation, Polly hung her head.
"Getting in or out disguised as washerwomen," said the captain, shaking his head. "Everyone outside this stupid country knows that one, lads, and most of them make more effort than you boys. Well, for you, the war is over. This place has got big, big dungeons, and I don't mind telling you, you're probably going to be better off in here than outside. Yeah, what do you want?"
Shufti had raised a hand.
"Can I show you something?" she said.
Polly didn't turn, but watched the captain's face as, beside Polly, cloth rustled. She couldn't believe it. Shufti was raising her skirt.
"Oh,"
said the captain.
There was an explosion from Tonka, but it was an explosion of tears. They came out accompanied by a long, mournful wail as she threw herself onto the floor. "We walked so far! We lay in ditches to hide from soldiers! There's no food! We want to work! You called us boys! Why are you so cruel?"
Polly knelt down and half picked her up, patting her on the back as Tonka's shoulders heaved with the force of her sobs. "It's been very hard for all of us," she said to the red-faced captain. "Have you seen everything you wish to see?"
"If you can take him down, I can garrote the other one with my apron string," whispered Tonka in her ear between howls.
"No, please," said the captain, giving the guard the agonized glance of a man who knows that he's going to be the laughing stock of the whole fort inside the hour.
"Once was quite... Look, I'm completely satisfied. Private, go and fetch one of the women from the laundry. I am so sorry, ladies. I have a job to do."
"Do you enjoy it?" said Polly, every syllable tinkling with ice.
"Yes," said the captain hurriedly. Yes. We have to be careful.
The soldier had returned, trailing a woman. Polly stared.
Daphne, some new, volunteers for Mrs. Enid," said the captain, waving vaguely toward the squad. "I'm sure she will have some use for them,
"Oh, certainly, Captain,"
said the woman, curtsying demurely. Polly still stared.
"Off you go with Daphne, ladies," said the captain. "And if you're hard workers, Mrs. Enidville, I am sure, give you a pass so's we don't have this trouble again,
Shufti put both hands on his desk, leaned towards him, and said,
"Boo!"
His chair hit the wall.
"I may not be clever," she said to Polly, "but I'm not stupid."
But Polly was still staring at Lieutenant Blouse. He'd curtsied surprisingly well. The soldier escorted them along a tunnel which opened onto a ledge overlooking what was either a cave or a room. It was at that level in the keep where there was not much difference. This wasn't a laundry. This was clearly some hot, damp afterlife for those who required punishment with extra scrubbing. Steam rolled across the ceiling, condensed and dripped onto a floor that was already running with water. And it went on forever, washtub after washtub. Women moved like ghosts through the drifting, tumbling clouds of fog.
"There you go, ladies," he said, and slapped Blouse on the rump. "See you tonight, then, Daphne."
"Oh, yes,"
trilled Blouse.
5 o'clock, then,"
said the soldier, and ambled off down the corridor.
"Daphne," said Polly when the man had gone.
"My, nom de guerre," said Blouse. "I still haven't found a way out of the lower areas, but the guards all have keys, and I shall have his key in my hand by 5:30. Pardon?"
"I think Magda, just bit her tongue," said Polly.
"Her? Oh, yes. Well done for staying in character,
Polly,"
said Polly.
"Good choice of name," said Blouse, leading the way down some steps. "It's a good, common, maid-servant-y sort of name."
"Yes, that's what I thought," said Polly gravely.
Sergeant, Jackram not with you at all?"
said the lieutenant with a trace of nervousness.
"No, sir. He said he was going to lead a charge on the main gate, sir, if we could send him a signal. I hope he doesn't try without one."
"'Good heavens! The man's mad!' said Blouse. "'Splendid effort from the lads, though. Well done. You definitely pass for women to the casual observer.'
"'Coming from you, Daphne, that is a big compliment,' said Polly, thinking, "'Gosh, I'm really good at keeping a straight face.'
"'But you didn't need to come after me,' said Blouse. "'I'm sorry I couldn't get a signal to you, but Mrs. Enid allowed me to stay overnight, you see. The guards don't do so many checks at night, so I made use of my time to look for ways into the upper keep. All gated or really heavily guarded, I'm afraid. However, Private Hauptfiddle has taken a rather a shine to me.'
"'Well done, sir,' said Polly.
"'Sorry, I want to be clear, sir,' said Tonka. "'You have a date with a guard?' "'Yes, and I'll suggest we go somewhere dark, and then, when I've got what I want, I shall break his neck,' said Blouse.
"'Isn't that going a bit far on a first date?' said Tonka.
"'Sir, did you have any trouble getting in?'
said Polly. This had been nagging at her.
"'No, not at all. I just smiled and wiggled my hips, and they waved me through.'
"'Didn't they ask you for your papers?' said Polly, horrified.
"'Well, they did, but I just said I was such a silly girl I kept on losing them. Then I burst into tears, which is very feminine, and then the captain lent me his handkerchief and said it was all right.'
Blouse beamed.
"'What about you?'
"'Oh, we had a little bit of trouble,' said Polly. "'It was a bit it was a bit awkward for a moment or two.' She fumed inside. It seemed so unfair.
"'What did I tell you?' said Blouse triumphantly. "'It's all down to thespian ability, but you are plucky lads to try it. Come and meet Mrs. Enid, a very loyal lady. The brave womenfolk of Borogravia are on our side.'
And indeed there was a picture of the Duchess in the alcove that served the laundry mistress for an office. Mrs. Enid wasn't a particularly large woman, but she had forearms like jade, a soaking wet apron, and the most mobile mouth Polly had ever seen. Her lips and tongue drew out every word like a big shape in the air. The laundresses, in a cavern full of hissing steam, echoes, falling water, and the thud of wet clothes on stone, watched lips when ears were overwhelmed. When she was listening, her mouth moved all the time, too, like someone trying to dislodge a piece of nut from a tooth. She wore her sleeves rolled up above her elbows. She listened impassively as Blouse introduced the squad.
"'I see,' she said. "'Right. You leave your lads here with me, sir. You ought to get back to the pressing room.'
When Blouse had bounced and wobbled back through the steam, Mrs. Enid looked them all up and down and then straight through.
"'Lads,' she grunted. "'Ha! That's all he knows, eh? For a woman to wear the clothes of a man is an abomination unto Nuggan.'
"'But we're dressed as women, Mrs. Enid,' said Polly meekly.
Mrs. Enid's mouth moved ferociously. Then she folded her arms. It was like a barricade going up against all that was ungodly. "'It's not right,' she said. "'I've got a son and a husband prisoner in this place, and I am working myself to the bone for the enemy, just so's I can keep an eye on 'em. They're going to invade, you know. It's amazing what we hear down here. So what good's rescuing your men going to do 'em when we're all under the heel of the Slovenian hand-painted clog, eh?'
"'Slovenia will not invade,' said Wazza confidently. "'The Duchess will see to it. Be not afraid.'
Wazza got the sort of look she always got when someone heard her for the first time.
"'Been praying, have you?